Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson. In this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Michael Sacca, the Director of Business Development and Marketing at Dribbble by Day and the co-host of Rocketship.fm by Night. Michael and his co-hosts at Rocketship have been working on their first podcast, Rocketship.fm, since 2014, where they've been interviewing people and talking about all things business and startups. Some of the guests they've interviewed include Product Hunt's Ryan Hoover, Mikhail Cho, the founder of Crew and Unsplash, Seth Godin, Sean Ellis, the list goes on and on. Now, more than 300 episodes into their show, Michael and his co-hosts are generating a consistent $10,000 a month from their podcasting side project. And just last year, they launched a brand new show called This New Economy that dives into incredibly interesting stories like the untold story of Books.com, the first company to actually sell something online. And what I love most about Michael's podcast and his approach is that they're so high quality, it seriously blows my mind. If you've ever listened to an NPR show like Planet Money or Gimlet's show Startup, then Rocketship will sound very familiar to you. They weave in storytelling, interviews, jokes, and create this feeling that you're seriously sitting right next to them in the room. So in this episode, Michael and I talk about how he launched Rocketship as a side project, the strategies they use to grow their listenership into the hundreds of thousands and into a stable source of around $10,000 a month in side income. We go deep into Michael's personal process for structuring and scripting out their podcast episodes, including how they weave in elements of storytelling with original interviews they grab from industry-leading experts in the world of business. We're covering the exact tools, equipment, and processes Michael uses to produce an episode of Rocketship. He shares behind the scenes into their podcast sponsorship process, how they get some of the world's top brands to advertise on their show, and what it was like getting sponsorships in the very early days for Rocketship. So if you're interested in ever starting a podcast of your own, this is seriously a masterclass in how to launch one. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Michael Sacca. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hey, Ryan, how's it going?
Oh, man, it's great. It's great. It's 2018. We're here. We're doing it live. And and I'm super excited to talk to you. You're someone that I've known for a long time. I've really looked up to everything that you guys have done in the podcast world. So, you know, for everyone listening, today's conversation is about podcasting. And Michael is a master at it. But before we get into podcasting, I got to ask, the way that I've been starting off all these interviews for my show is by finding out what book you're reading right now, or if you're not currently reading something, what's been your favorite recently?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I actually just picked up a book by my friend Elliot Pepper. So I've been meaning to read Cumulus, which is, it's a dystopian novel based in Oakland, where he lives, about the future where basically the surveillance economy takes over. So it's like a sci-fi techno thriller, but he's been, you know, one of my favorite modern authors. And so I've really enjoyed kind of reading his vision of where tech could go if it all goes wrong.
Man, I love that. I'm going to have to link that up in the show notes for everyone listening, because I'm adding that to my own reading list.
Yes.
Very relevant today. But Michael, I want to go back to the very beginning with you. Where are you originally from?
So I'm from Albany, New York. And then I've kind of moved all over. We've lived in Los Angeles, Las Vegas, San Diego, and now Montreal.
All right. What originally brought you out to California?
I had gotten a music industry degree to no luck. So I moved out to LA to try to get a job. And it didn't pan out, and I ended up learning how to code instead after 3 years of waiting tables. But that's what originally brought me out to the West Coast. And we were there. I met my wife on the West Coast, and we spent about 10 years living the good life. And now we're back in the snow.
Did you guys, or did you in particular, ever have a job utilizing your coding skills, or was that sort of just for personal benefit?
No. So I, you know, in order to quit the restaurant, I taught myself how to code. And then I built an agency. We had clients like Scholastic, GE, Nike. And so that's how I was able to move away from waiting tables and actually work for myself for about 5 years until I was ready to move on from the agency and I really wanted to work at a startup. And so that's when I joined Crew as the head of partnerships.
I love that. And what point in this journey did Rocket Ship FM sort of enter the picture? Was it when you were still doing the agency?
Yeah. So at the agency, we always wanted to be an agency that built product, right? So we looked up to 37 Signals and MetaLab. Mm-hmm. And so we always wanted to have our own products, but we built a couple. We built a language learning app for children, for the iOS store. And then we built Brandesty, which was it helped you kind of upload your vector assets, your vector brand assets and distribute them. But we weren't very good at getting out into the market and actually making money. And so that's when I started the podcast with Matt and Joel Goldman, so that we could get people on the phone and they would actually answer our call and we could ask them advice about what we were doing wrong and what we should be doing better so that we could actually grow a business outside of consulting.
I love that. I love that it was born out of just wanting to have these conversations in the first place. And then, you know, sort of the second thought, oh my God, we should be recording these.
that we were going to write a book at first. And then we realized we really weren't that good at writing. And then we didn't have any expertise. So we found that the podcast was a great way where we didn't have to be the expert in these topics, but we were still able to deliver a lot of value to anyone who was listening.
Do you remember recording your first episode of the show? Was it an interview? Was it just like a conversation between the three of you guys, the co-hosts, or what did that look like?
We got lucky enough to book Ryan Hoover right when he had started Product Hunt. And that was our very first episode. It was the three of us sitting around a table and then Ryan called in. And I mean, it's still live. You can still listen to it. But we didn't really know what to ask or how to kind of move the conversation along. You can kind of tell, but you know, we tried to capture his story about starting Product Hunt. And at that time, it was still in its infancy. They had just launched Product Hunt. So he was our first interview. And then we kind of leveraged, you know, as his name grew, we were able to leverage, you know, his interview into bigger interviews, right? And that's one of the ways that you can continually get great guests on.
Wow. That's awesome timing for you guys.
It was lucky. It was. it was not skilled. It was just Matt Goldman was on like a chat, like a group chat with Ryan and just asked him. And, you know, it was luck that that Product Hunt turned into what it is today.
Mm-hmm. No, but I think there's a great example of how these things really materialize, right? Like it's easy to look back and try and point at, you know, tons of skill and strategy and starting something like this. But the reality is that you just have to get lucky and put in the time that will, you know, create that luck for you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it, you got to stick with it, right? Because luck, you know, we got a good first episode, but we've had a lot of duds in between. And it's all about sticking with it. We've done over 300 episodes now to where you get those flagship episodes with the guests that you really are looking forward to booking.
Wow, 300. That's super impressive. Looking back at some of the people you've interviewed, what have been some of your favorites and why?
So, yeah, there's a lot of different ones. I mean, my first favorite was with Adi Panair, because we caught him at a time where after he had left WooThemes and he was trying to figure out what he was going to do. And it was just a very raw time in his kind of entrepreneurial journey where he was uncertain. And you could tell while we were talking to him, it felt like we were capturing something that you don't generally see. Oftentimes when you talk to business people, you kind of get the wins. But we were actually getting a lot of the losses, the frustration, that this isn't quite working and I don't know why, which, you know, was interesting to hear from someone who we looked up to like Adi. And so that was one of the first interviews where I really felt we had captured a moment in time. And since then, you know, we've talked to like Seth Godin. He's amazing. I just interviewed Dennis Crowley from Foursquare, kind of about the sacrifices, the behind the scenes sacrifices that he had to make Foursquare what it is today. And we even got to talk to, Laird Hamilton, the famous big wave surfer. And that was an experience talking to someone a bit outside of the business world. About their how they achieved something so impressive and being, you know, the number one big wave surfer in the world.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that a lot. So, Michael, shifting the conversation a little bit now, I want to talk about sort of the logistics of how you've been able to make a podcast happen. And I'm sure it's changed and grown and evolved a lot over the years, right? So one of the things that I like most about, you know, Rocket Ship, this new economy, all the shows, all the episodes that you guys put out, is that they're seriously like NPR level quality. So you guys weave in storytelling, interview clips, you know, jokes, everything is so, you know, high level that I feel like I'm literally sitting in the room with you. Do you guys script out your episodes or is it all off the cuff? Can you just talk about that process for how an episode comes together?
Yeah. First, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I hope that we can get to NPR one day. But yeah, so we script out everything now. So at first it was kind of off the cuff. We do a bit of research on our into our interview. And then we would kind of roll the interview kind of haphazardly. Often it would take directions that, you know, we weren't too enthused with afterwards. And so to start to minimize that, what we do now is we do a full interview, but then we take that audio content and break it down into the pieces that the listeners actually want to listen to. And the other side of this was, you know, we would get these great clips at minute 13 to 14 of an interview where we knew people started tuning out either literally or kind of as they're listening to a podcast, they're walking down the street, they're doing other things, right? So we thought that if we could take those golden moments and start to pull them out and make it so that you don't miss that, that little nugget, we could build these episodes that were even more valuable, than our previous interviews. So what we started to do was we would just do a 20, 30 minute interview with a guest and we would do a couple of them around the same topic. So we talked to two or three people and then now we start to script out the shows and pull the different nuggets from those interviews together to build one piece of content that is really high value to a listener. I'd be happy to walk through that kind of script process to recording and how that works.
Oh, let's go really deep into this. So one of the questions that comes to mind first is when you're scripting this out, do you sort of have a script in place before you even go out and interview someone? Like, you know, with we want an interview to fill in some of the gaps here and here, or do you sort of take the opposite approach?
So we do both. So at first we take the opposite approach where we have the general topic. So we want to learn about, you know, how people manage projects, right? So it could be that high level. And then we'll go out and find project managers and we'll interview them. And then based on those interviews, you see some trends, right? And then you always want to find a bit of a counterpoint if you can. And so that's when we'll take those interviews, we'll start to script out the show. And then if we have holes, we'll try to see who is out there on the internet, you know, talking about or writing about an opinion that we also need in this episode. And those we can jump on a 5-minute call, right? Because we basically have one question and we just want to grab that clip. So that's kind of our high level process. But it always starts with a big idea and then interviewing people to make sure that we're on the right track.
So the other question I have, because I've personally experimented with this a little bit in my early episodes for this podcast, is sort of crafting that actual, you know, script, like writing out verbatim what I want to say and when. But I found that it's so time consuming for me. It's just you know, there's no way around it. I would almost have to bring in help for scripting out my episodes if I wanted to go full force in that direction. So, you know, what does that process look like for you guys? How much time are you spending on the actual script before you record?
Yeah, so a script will probably take about an hour. And it, like, we've been marinating on these ideas for probably a couple weeks at that point, by the time I sit down and actually write the script. And so when I already pretty much know where we want to go, and we start with kind of the outline of what's the arc of the episode, right? So where do we start? How do we drag people in, right? How do we get them interested without giving them the conclusion? And then what do we want to teach them along the way? And then what is that big conclusion? What's the last line of the episode that we want people to walk away with? And then in there, we start to fill in the gaps of what clips can we pull in? What jokes can we tell? What stories do we want to open up with? So we always try to open with kind of a story with Mike and I, just kind of going back and forth, Mike Belsito, the co-host. And so the script takes me about an hour to write, and I'm really writing a conversation between two people. And so, like, I kind of know Mike's personality. He knows mine. And so when we sit down, we just kind of put words in each other's mouth with the script. And then when we turn on to record, it takes us about 15 minutes to record an episode by the time we're done, because we don't have a lot of the back and forth. I don't know if I like that, right? It's really easy to run through the script and record a 20-minute episode in about 15 minutes, and then you fill in the rest with the clips.
Man, I'm taking notes over here, by the way.
I'm going to pull up a script. Yeah, yeah. I wanted to get an idea of kind of how simple it could be. So we just did an episode on product storytelling. And so the script starts out with, you know, I literally write, Sokka, so Mike, do you remember the story of Jack and the Beanstalk? And then he says, yes, basically, right? He probably does remember, but in the script, we're kind of, you know, framing it that he doesn't. And then I go on and ask him a bunch of questions. So we try to make it really conversational, not too much detail, right? As if you and I were having a quick conversation back and forth. So I hope that helps a little bit on how much detail goes into the script.
Yeah, no, that's really insightful. And you know, related to this topic here, I know you and Mike do not live in the same city. So you guys are essentially remote for podcast recording purposes. So does that present any unique challenges, or is it sort of, you know, easy for you guys to produce and host a podcast together being remote?
Yeah, so it's gotten easier once we've figured out, like, with Rocketship in the beginning, we were always trying to be at the same place at the same time. So all three of us would be in interviews, right? We would all participate in booking and selling sponsorships, et cetera. But what we've tried to do now is really spread out. So that's why we do the script, right? So that one person just owns an episode, writes the entire thing, and then we just come together for that 15 minutes and record it. And the tools now are really easy too. So we used to use like Skype and Ecamm recorder, but now we just use Zencastr, which is a really great tool for recording. So we record all our interviews with that. We also record, all of our like host commentary with that. So I think the script makes it a bit easier, because sometimes conversations over, you know, over the internet aren't quite as personal as you want them to be. But honestly, when we script them out, we can make them sound like the conversation that we want to have, which is sometimes harder when you're not sitting in the same room.
Yeah, totally. And I'm really glad that you started to mention equipment and tools there. So Zencastr is where you guys record. I've experimented with it myself. I really like it. But I want to dig into some of the other equipment that you guys use, because we have a lot of people listening today that are considering starting a podcast on the side of their day jobs. What are some of the basics that people should be investing in just to get started? And, you know, how much would you expect, or, you know, you recommend to spend on something like a microphone, recording software, editing, and such?
Yeah. So if we start with the essential, right, the microphone, that's like what captures your voice. We use a Heel PR40. It's about $400, $450. You probably spend about half that on a decent microphone to start off. But I wouldn't go too lo-fi. There's a lot more competition in the podcast space. And, you know, your audio quality is the same as your website design, right? It's how people are going to judge you. So no matter how good your content is, if the audio quality isn't there, they're going to turn it off. I do, you know, and so it's harder to grow that audience. So I would spend, you know, under $200 on a microphone, between $100 and $200, you can get a really great microphone. If you run that into a preamp that runs into your computer, you get a slightly better sound and a little bit more control of your recording. And then, so I use let me pull this up here. It's the Focusrite. It's available on Amazon. I think it's under $100. It's a Focusrite preamp. And then for mixing, we use Adobe Audition because I already pay for the Adobe Cloud, which is $50 a month. So they have a music editing software or audio editing software, Audition, in there. So I use that to do all of our mixing I have for the last 4 years. It's not the nicest piece of software, but I think you can get a standalone for like $20 a month. It's definitely worth it. And it's got all of the presets that you would need to kind of EQ your audio, add music, slice and dice if needed. It makes it really easy to do that. So that's how we do all of our mixing. And then I actually run our mix through something called Ophonic. Let me make sure that's... So it's A-U-F-P-H-O-N-I-C. And so what that does is kind of our mastering. So we get our audio, we've got the general levels together, and then we run it through Ophonic, which then masters it. It normalizes all of our audio. It does some other noise cancellation and noise reduction on the audio. And, you know, aside from paying someone to actually master each episode, it's the cheapest way and the fastest way I could figure to get the highest quality audio without spending a ton of time you know, in the studio mastering.
So Ophonic is an actual tool that sort of automates this process of mastering.
Yeah. Mastering is not that easy. And even with Audition, you don't quite get the compression levels correct. It's really hard to do. I've been doing audio for a long time. And honestly, like, I don't want to sit there on every episode. I don't have the time. This is a side project for me too, right? So I'm trying to find these little ways where I can improve the quality of the podcast sound without having to spend a ton of time actually doing it. And I don't really have the funds to pay someone to do it. So that's where Ophonic comes in. And it's the last step in our compression.
This is awesome. This is like a master class in how to produce a high quality podcast. So we're going to include the links to all of these tools, equipments that Michael mentioned in the show notes. But I want to move on because I know your time is limited, but I've got a lot of other questions.
Sure,
for you.
Sure.
Sort of selfishly. We saw the introduction of a new podcast from you guys, which I think is in a really cool new direction. It's called This New Economy, which... You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but the core premise of the show is that you guys are telling interesting stories about humanity through economics. So topics like diversity in tech, whether or not basic income should be implemented, things like that. So curious to hear what inspired the creation of this show.
Yeah, well, we've been doing business content for the last 3 years. And I found that myself, like I do listen to business podcasts, but I also listen to Planet Money, right? And I also listen to these other shows that I get a lot of value out of, and they really have storytelling at the core. And so we just wanted to try our hands at, could we create business content? So that's why we always try to tie it back to economics, but that tells a human story, right? A story about people. And so that was really the goal with This New Economy. With season one, we told like the untold story of books.com, even, which was the first site to ever sell anything on the internet. They sold books on the internet. And they were the first company to ever set up an e-commerce site. And they actually got flack from the internet community at that time for selling, because the internet wasn't for selling. It wasn't for commerce. So we tried to bring those kind of stories to life that didn't quite fit onto Rocket Ship, right? They were a little bit broader and they didn't necessarily have a teaching element to it. But we thought that people who are interested in business would still be interested in hearing those stories.
So I want to talk now about sponsorships. I know this is a side project for you. How much are you guys, ballpark figure, generating in revenue from show sponsorships each month?
Yeah, so we bring in, it's been pretty steady, around $10,000 a month. And that's been like a mix of inbound and outbound. So we get a lot of inbound interest for the show. We run a dynamic ad server. So we use, here's some more tools. We use Omni for our podcast host and Triton for our dynamic ad server. And what that allows us to do is basically every time an episode is downloaded, it builds the episode with the ads in it. So that we're not selling ads on an episode that'll permanently be there. They'll always be replaced. And so that allows us to better use our inventory of 300 episodes. What we do now is a CPM model, similar to if you were selling ads on a blog post. And they range from $25 to $50 CPM.
That's fascinating. I love that. My only experience with doing podcast sponsorships with this show is basically, you know, investing a ton of time in going out and building a relationship with someone at a brand that I think would be interested in highlighting their tool, their product, their service to my audience. And you know, that's often a very time-consuming process. So when you guys aren't doing this more automated approach, do you have some sort of sales process for doing the outbound outreach as well?
Yeah, so we really try to keep the value on the brand that we're selling. So some of it might be really personable. Like if I hear a podcast ad that I think the offer would resonate well with our audience, I'll reach out directly to them and say, "Hey, I heard you on this show, you know, and I think this offer would do really well with us. Can we get it on there?" We'll do more general outreach and just use like our download numbers and our general audience niche of entrepreneurs and product people as kind of the selling point. And we often, you know, we always have to have a phone call, but we always try to lead with the value of, we try not to tell them too much about us, right? I mean, it's important that they know what the show is about, but what they really want to hear about is how many downloads do you have? How many people am I going to reach? Who are those people? You know, what is your audience demographic? And why is it going to benefit me? And so that's where we cater our pitch to, is how we are going to benefit them, not necessarily just how great we are, because they don't really care.
Mm-hmm. So in your sort of recommendation, I guess, for someone who has a relatively new show that isn't getting, you know, thousands of downloads per episode, what kinds of value props would you advise that they try and lean on if they're going in out and pitching sponsors?
Yeah. So in the early days, you know, we were in that position and we worked with really friendly companies. So and oftentimes, honestly, it was like, we like you guys, you like us, you know, we're going to kind of support the show, but we don't expect a huge return from it. So we would make our pricing really approachable. We used to charge like $100 an episode, and that was good enough for some sponsors. We had like Envision and CodeShip for a really long time at that pricing. And then, and we would make it, we would do a lot of extra work on the ad itself so that we would deliver their message. So I would always meet with them, figure out what their goal was for this ad, and then really try to cater the audio to the message that they wanted to get. So even if we were only reaching a couple hundred people, we made it really effective for us, and they could tell that we were putting in that extra effort. They're advertising everywhere, but once they get up into the bigger podcast, they're not going to put that level of care into their message as you can. And that's one of your advantages. So it is a little bit of relationship building. It's a little bit of sponsorship because your show has a niche and you know the interested company wants to support that. Because you're probably not going to sell it on an ROI, like on a return on investment. If you're under 1,000 listens, it's really hard for a company to actually see an ROI. But you can present it as a brand play. And you can present it as kind of like a charity. That's not the best way to describe it, but that's what a lot of our early sponsors were, was they really just believed in us and they wanted to help us grow.
No, I think that's really great advice, especially, you know, just leaning into what you can do, right? Like you don't have the thousands of downloads, but you can invest the time into creating an ad that makes, when your sponsor hears it, makes them think, "Oh wow, this is really good." Or, you know, they're trying to go all out for us.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. And that's what you got. You got hustle, right? That's our side projects. And that's the hustle in the advertising. You can also look at like affiliate deals. You can look at, there's a couple other different ways that you can monetize a podcast. What I see is a lot of people actually selling their own products with an early podcast rather than taking on sponsorships.
I like that. That's a good idea. So, Michael, now that we're into 2018, what's coming up for you guys this year?
Oh, I've got a bunch of new shows that I want to that I want to produce. We want to start actually doing some, I guess, like actual episodes, like where we're scripting out a story, the storyline. So we have one based in the tech industry that we've been writing. That I'm really excited to get out there. Rocketship, we're all focused on product right now. So hopefully we'll be doing more on future of product. We've got some great Bitcoin and artificial intelligence interviews lined up that I'm really excited about. And so we'll be doing a future of product. We'll be doing a jobs to be done series. And hopefully we'll get another This New Economy season in. We still have a lot of leftover content that I'd like to get out there. And some really great stories to tell.
Awesome. I can't wait to tune in for that. But Michael, right now I want to transition over to a few of my frequently asked questions, which I've designed to be intentionally short on my end. Your answers do not need to be gross. What would be your number one piece of advice to someone who wants to start a podcast today?
Just start, right? I think the hardest part is just to get going, and we don't have to have everything planned out. So I would do the best you can. Find a niche, right? Find a reason why people want to listen that's not currently out there. You know, I think general business is really hard, but if you are really good at something inside of this ecosystem, tell your story and get out there. I would start it for free and not worry about how you're going to monetize it, until you figure out how you're going to get it to grow. And then you figure out how to put some revenue dollars behind it. But I think getting started and just figuring out what your voice is, what you're going to be. Podcasting, once you get the hang of it, it's a lot faster than writing, and it's a lot less permanent. And that's why I like it, is that it doesn't feel like I need everything to be perfect all the time. I can put something out there and I can have a couple mistakes in it. People will keep listening. They kind of forget about it. It's not like writing where everyone goes back and analyzes every word.
Mm-hmm. And I'll second that. Podcasting for me is so much easier than writing. Despite being a writer, which is hilarious.
And you're a writer. It's so much forgiving. Sorry, go on.
Oh, yes. Exactly. Michael, what kinds of sacrifices do you feel that you've had to make in order to put enough time and effort into growing the podcast on the side over the years?
Mostly sleep, I think. And that's like my fault, because I do work full time. I'm the director of business development and marketing at Dribbble. And so, you know, all of our recording and mixing, that all happens at night. And so often, you know, every week there's at least a 2 or 3 a.m. Mixing session. And so I think that's just the time it takes to even do any side project is always a sacrifice of time that you could be doing something else. But the great thing is you get to watch something grow that's yours. And I think that experience in life is incredibly rewarding. And I wouldn't give it up for a couple hours of sleep.
How many hours per week would you say that you guys are investing in the podcast?
So between the interview recordings, it's probably about 5 or 6 hours a week, which isn't a ton. I have 2 kids and a family and a full-time job. And so even finding those 5 or 6 hours can be challenging. In the beginning, I was probably spending closer to 10 to 15 until I found, like, kind of got that groove, found some shortcuts and figured out exactly the process. Once I got the process down, I could really stick to the process and get a lot of this done faster. Now we're down to about 5 or 6 hours, which is manageable, but it's still 5 or 6 hours that I could be doing something else.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys had any particular, you know, strategies, interviews, ideas, tactics, ideas that you've tested out that have ended up being a failure?
Tons. So one thing to keep in mind when you're doing a podcast is your audience wants you to do what you do. They don't like a lot of experimentation. And so we found that when we deviated from off the course of Rocket Ship and we would do interviews around topics that weren't necessarily entrepreneurial driven, but we were still interested in, like nonprofits or, even some of like the future tech stuff, it just doesn't get as well good a reception. So I think we do it to keep ourselves sane, because this is a side project. We want to talk about the stuff that we're interested in. But your audience wants you to do what you do. That's why they're tuning in. And so it's one of the lessons that we've learned, that with that experimentation, oftentimes if it's too much of a deviation from why people originally tuned in, they tend to tune out and they put their ears somewhere else. And that's understandable. I think it's a balance as creators to do something that you're really interested in and that you're really resonates with an audience over a period of time. And so with each new, like this new economy, we kind of have to find a new audience for it. Because not everyone that listens to Rocket Ship wants to listen to this new economy. So even though it's still in the business realm, it's still a new audience, and we've had to grow that from scratch again.
That's great advice. So Michael, this is going to be my last question for you. What's been the best investment you feel you've ever made in the context of growing the podcast? So this could be in the form of time, money, education, people, tools, products, services, or otherwise.
Yeah, I think absolutely people. And other podcasters have really helped get the word out. We've often traded ads with other podcasts or been guests and helped host other podcasts. And so those have been great tools to grow. But then also just in life, right? Like, being able to have and foster these relationships that you build just by spending some time talking to people. You really are able to nurture various relationships, which I think no matter what you're doing, be it a podcast or just a career, is helpful. And this time that you're spending recording and interviewing, you're also building relationships, which is one of the most important things we can do in life.
Yeah, it's the long-term effect of doing these side projects, right?
Yeah, we meet people along the way that stay with us, even if the project doesn't. And that I'm really thankful for.
I love it. Well, this is a great place to wrap up. So Michael, thanks for being here. Can you tell everyone listening where they can go to learn more about you, Rocket Ship, your other podcasts, everything you guys are up to?
Yeah. So you can check out Rocket Ship at rocketship.fm, this new economy at thisneweconomy.com, or just search for them in any of the podcast stores that you listen to. You can follow me on Twitter at Michael Sacca, and I think that's the best place to find me.
Awesome. Well, Michael, thank you for being here and parting us with so much wisdom.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the time, Ryan.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.